Fabianism was a principal force and inspiration behind all major school legislation of the first half of the 20th century, and it will doubtless continue to be in the 21st. It will help us understand Fabian influence to look at the first Fabian-authored consideration of public schooling, the most talked-about education book of 1900, Thomas Davidson's peculiar and fantastic History of Education. The Dictionary of American Biography describes Davidson as a naturalized Scot, American since 1867, and a follower of William Torrey Harris, Federal Commissioner of Education, the most influential Hegelian in North America. Davidson was also first president of the Fabian Society in England, a fact not thought worthy of preservation in the biographical dictionary, but otherwise easy enough to confirm. This news is also absent from Pelling's America and the British Left, although Davidson is credited there with usurping the Fabians. In his important monograph, Education in the Forming of American Society, Bernard Bailyn, as you'll recall, said anyone bold enough to venture a history of American schooling would have to explain the sharp disjunction between separating these local institutions, as they existed from 1620 to 1890, from the massification which followed afterwards. In presenting his case, Bailyn had cause to compare two notable books on the subject, which both appeared in 1900. One was Davidson's, the other Edward Eggleston's. Eggleston's Transit of Civilization, Bailyn calls, quote, a remarkably imaginative effort to analyze the original investment from which has developed the Anglo-Saxon culture in America, by probing the complex states of knowing and thinking, the feeling and passion of the 17th century colonists, unquote. The opening words of Eggleston's book, said Bailyn, make clear the central position of education in early America. Bailyn calls Transit one of the subtlest and most original books ever written on the subject, and a seminal work, but he notes how quickly it was laid aside by American intelligentsia as an oddity, irrelevant to the interests of the group then firmly shaping the historical study of American education. For that group, the book of books was Davidson's History of Education. William James called its author a knight-errant of the intellectual life, an exuberant polymath. Bailyn agrees that Davidson's was a remarkable book, writing, quote, Davidson starts with the rise of intelligence when man first rose above the brute. Then he trots briskly through ancient Turanian, Semitic, and Aryan education and picks up speed on civic education in Judea, Greece, and Rome, gallops swiftly across Hellenistic, Alexandrian, patristic, and Muslim education, leaps magnificently over the thorny barriers of scholasticism, medieval universities, Renaissance, Reformation, and Counter-Reformation, and then plunges wildly through the remaining 5 centuries in 64 pages flat. Unquote. It was less the frantic scope than the purpose of this strange philosophical essay that distinguished it in the eyes of an influential group of writers. Its purpose was to dignify a new self-conscious profession called education. Its argument, a heady distillation of conclusions from social Darwinism, claimed that modern education was a cosmic force leading mankind to full realization of itself. Davidson's preface puts the intellectual core of Fabianism on center stage. Quote, my endeavor has been to present education as the last and highest form of evolution. By placing education in relation to the whole process of evolution as its highest form, I have hoped to impart to it a dignity which it could hardly otherwise receive or claim when it is recognized to be the highest phrase of the world process. World process here is an echo of Kant and Hegel, and for the teacher to be the chief agent in that process, both it and he assumes a very different aspect. Unquote. Here is the intellectual and emotional antecedent of creation spirituality, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin's assertion that evolution has become a spiritual inevitability in our time. Suddenly, mere schooling found itself elevated from its petty, despised position on the periphery of the known universe into an intimate involvement in the cosmic destiny of man, a master key too important to be left to parents. By 1906, Paul Monroe of Teachers College could write in his textbook In the History of Education that knowledge of the purpose of education was to supply the teacher with fundamentals of an everlasting faith as broad as human nature and as deep as the life of the race. This history of education, according to Balin, came to be taught as an introductory course, a form of initiation in every normal school, Department of Education, and Teachers' College in the country. He writes, "The story had to be got straight, and so a few of the more imaginative, of that energetic and able group of men concerned with mapping overall progress of scientific education, though not otherwise historians, took over the management of a historical work in education. With great virtuosity, they drew up what became the patristic literature of a powerful academic ecclesia. The official history of education grew in almost total isolation from the major influences and shaping minds of the 20th century historiography, and its isolation proved to be self-intensifying. The more parochial the subject became, the less capable it was of attracting the kinds of scholars who could give it broad relevance and bring it back into the public domain. It soon displayed the exaggeration of weakness and extravagance of emphasis that are the typical results of sustained inbreeding." Unquote. These educational missionaries spoke of schools as if they were monasteries. By limiting the idea of education to formal school instruction, the public gradually lost sight of what the real thing was. The questions these specialists disputed were as irrelevant to real people as disputes of medieval divines. There was about their writing a condescension for public concerns. For them, and I quote, "the whole range of education had become an instrument of deliberate social purpose." Unquote. After 1910, divergence between what various publics expected would happen in government schools and what the rapidly expanding school establishment intended to make happen opened a deep gulf between home and school, ordinary citizen and policymaker.